Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the founder and the host of the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast and the founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement. Today, I'll give a viewer discretion is advised due to the nature of the topics that we will be discussing. Today, I am joined by my friend Alyssa. Alyssa, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Zach. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I know this is a loaded question, but who is Alyssa? Walk us through who you are, what you do, and then we'll dive into your story. And for anybody who's listened to the podcast, you know that it's broken up in three stories. I always ask about before trauma, during trauma, and after trauma, if it's a trauma story, or before career, during the career, after career. It varies from person to person, but Alyssa, feel free to introduce yourself.
Sure, absolutely. So yes, my name is Alyssa Jevich. So before trauma, I'll first talk about my profession. I do work with children. I continue to be a child advocate, and I've worked in early intervention. I've worked with early Head Start. And actually, one of my positions is what led to me realizing about my own childhood trauma. So I do want to talk a little bit about that. In 2014, I was a caseworker in foster care. And what some people may not know is that the most common form of child abuse is sexual abuse. And at that time, I did not know that I was sexually abused as a child, starting at the age of 4 till around age 8. And I was abused by a family member. Actually, my paternal grandfather was my abuser. And I did not know that until about 2019. That's when my flashback started. But I'm bringing up my job as a caseworker in 2014 because, as a caseworker, every child on my caseload, they were ages about 8 until 12. Everyone on the caseload was sexually abused. So I was working with all of my clients, providing therapy in the foster home, providing trauma therapy. And so around that same time, I did have anxiety at that time. I was going to therapy for anxiety. I was taking medication for anxiety, but I did not have a depression at that time. And I started to feel depressed. So I went into my therapist and we started to have that conversation about feeling depressed. And I kept saying to her, like, this just seems very out of the blue. I'm not really sure where this is coming from. And again, just as a reminder, 2019 was when the flashback started, and this was 2014. So I said, this just seems out of the blue. And she kind of said, you know, usually these things don't come out of the blue, so we're trying to figure out why now, right? Why now do I did this depression start? So I ended up not being able to manage my symptoms at that time with just weekly therapy. But my symptoms weren't bad enough to be hospitalized. So I went into what is called a partial hospitalization program. And anyone listening who's not familiar with that, like I said, it's if weekly therapy is not enough, but your symptoms aren't bad enough, for lack of a better word, to be hospitalized. So you go to treatment Monday through Friday from 9 to 3. So I went into treatment for my depression. And so that was very helpful. I was there for a few weeks. I was put on an antidepressant that was helpful. And then we went on from there. Fast forward to 2019. I started to get very odd memories from when I was younger. I had these dreams that were, I would wake up and just feel uncomfortable. Flashes from when I was younger, and they just didn't make sense. I would wake up in the morning feeling like, and let me just interrupt for a moment and say, I do not call my abuser my grandfather because he does not deserve that title in any way, shape, or form. So I will refer to him as my abuser moving forward. So I would wake up in the morning sometimes feeling like my abuser was in the room, yet I knew that he wasn't. He passed away in 2002. So he was not there. I knew that. And I kept thinking, why do I feel like he is in here? This feels very uncomfortable. I feel creepy. I feel like somebody touched me. Like, what is going on? This is so off-putting. And so that is kind of what started it. And then I just started to have memories. And so right away, I'm like, I have to go to therapy. Like, I have to go back. I have to go into therapy next week and just see what the hell is going on. I have an amazing therapist. I've been seeing her for a few years. Her name is Rachel. And she is trauma certified. And thank goodness, because I would have had to change therapists. And anyone who's had to do that knows that it's like starting over your story. And I thought, oh my God, do I have to bring in a freaking PowerPoint that starts with 1985? I'll be in here forever. So, luckily, she was trauma certified. And this was the day that changed everything. And I may get very emotional with this. And I always tell people to be vulnerable. So here we go. I walked into her room. She shut the door. I sat down and I looked at her and I said, I think something bad happened. And she said, okay. She said, can you tell me more about that? I said, yes. I said, I think something bad happened. I think that I was actually abused when I was little. And she said, okay, what are some things that make you feel like that? And so I told her about like the nightmares, and I started to tell her about other things that I felt and other things that happened. And then she said, do you remember in 2014 when you started having major depression and you said it came out of the blue and we were kind of trying to figure out where that came from. And I said, it's probably not out of the blue and maybe one day down the line, we'll figure out where it came from. I said, yes. And she said, do you remember what you were doing in 2014? And what I was doing in 2014, if you can remember the beginning of the story, is I was working with children who were all sexually abused. So, my body remembered everything, but my brain did not. So, you may have heard of the book, The Body Keeps the Score, or if you have learned anything or read anything about trauma, your body does remember things usually before your brain does. Excuse me. And in my situation, it did. So, when I was working with all these children, my brain did not remember anything yet. But my body sure as hell did. And looking back, I used to get migraines, vertigo, low-grade fevers. These things had nothing to do with viruses. These were all things that had to do with PTSD, that I was diagnosed with then, in 2019. And then that started, that part of my life. And wow, it has been quite the journey. The next thing my therapist said to me was, this is like Pandora's box. And if we open it, there's no closing it. And so I sat there and thought, here's the thing. I have a decision to make. Knowing opening this box is going to be the fucking hardest thing I've ever done because I'm going to find out so much stuff and some of it is going to be so awful. And I don't really want to even know some of it. However, knowing these things about my life is going to help me understand myself so much better. So I made the decision, of course, to dive into that with her help, in this safe space and learn further what happened. And even today, I have days where I'm just like, oh man, some days I wish I didn't know. But I still end up back in the space of I'm really glad that I do know. Because what her and I explored together after that was she gave me information And it was like, here are symptoms or mental health diagnoses, et cetera, of people, adults who were sexually abused as children. And there must have been 60 things on there. And 50 out of the 60 things I had, for example, generalized anxiety disorder, eating disorder, severe depression, you know, having challenging romantic relationships. I mean, it was just a page full of things, and I checked almost all of them off. And so knowing what happened to me just helped me understand who I was better, because when you have all these behaviors or all these fears or these patterns of behavior, and you don't know why the hell you're doing these things, that's extremely frustrating. Or when you have people look at you and say, why do you do that? And you're like, I don't know why the fuck I do that. That's extremely frustrating. Yet when you find out a part of your history and you can learn why you do something, that's extremely helpful. So I have the same therapist. I still meet her every week. And I think what people don't understand about PTSD is that it is chronic and it is every day. And just like any other mental illness, you know, you have great days when you feel like you don't have it. And you have days where you definitely feel you have it. And the other thing I wanted to bring up is a lot of people are not familiar with CPTSD because it's currently not in the DSM, which is the diagnostic manual that psychologists and licensed therapists use to diagnose people with mental illness or disorders. And it stands for complex PTSD. And that is a little different than PTSD. Complex PTSD is what I have, because my abuse was over and over the course of 4 years from age 4 to 8, like I mentioned. Whereas PTSD, in some cases, the example some people give is you may have one major incident. You may be in a natural disaster, a car accident, something like that. Complex is exactly what it sounds like. It's more complex. And for example, with me having it start so early in childhood, that also can be very different. My master's degree is in child development. And sometimes that's a blessing and a curse, because I learned a lot about, as you can imagine, infant and toddler brain development. I had a whole graduate class on that. So when you know about those things, you know, I understand brain development. So I really understood what my brain was going through as a four-year-old. So my brain's developing in this environment where I'm being abused. And so that is extremely deep-rooted. You know, does that mean I can't heal? No, but it means it's a lot fucking harder to do, because it's so much undoing. So that definitely makes it harder. And another thing I do want to bring up correlated to that is people don't realize, I want to talk about survival mode. When you go through abuse, especially at a young age, you are put in survival mode, because that is all you are trying to do is survive. You're not trying to thrive. You're just trying to get through these horrific moments. And so you go into survival mode, and that's where you stay. And so I was in survival mode. I stayed in survival mode. And then you end up, my metaphor is I use coats like jackets. So throughout my little life, I put on these coats to keep me safe. One maybe would be people pleasing, because I never wanted anyone to be mad at me. I didn't want to rough the waters. I had a secret. I was told not to tell anybody. You be quiet, be a nice girl. We don't cause issues. We don't tell secrets. So then you grow up and you learn these things. And so you put on a coat of people pleasing. You put on a coat of being a nice girl. You don't argue. You don't get angry. But then you stay in survival mode, and then you grow up and you become an adult and you still have these things on. And then you start to look around and you become an adult and you're like, wait a minute, this doesn't feel right. I don't think I'm this person. And then in therapy, you start to realize that this is not authentically who you are. This is the person you became to survive. And that is a really fucking hard thing to do because now, like me, I'm 45 years old. So even now, still, it's like, well, who am I not in survival mode? Because I don't have to be in survival mode anymore. So authentically, who am I? Well, now we have to unbecome these things. I am not a people pleaser. I'm allowed to get angry. So we have to take all these coats off. We have to unbecome all of these things. I read something the other day that I found extremely fascinating, that I think might help people. It was discussing the difference between being kind and nice. I was very nice through my whole life. Being nice, in my opinion, has a lot to do with people pleasing. Be nice to everybody. You know, don't cause a ruckus. Boundaries are bullshit. You don't need boundaries. Just be nice to everybody. Don't cause an issue. But then there's being kind. Being kind is being compassionate. Being kind, you know, you have empathy, but have good boundaries. Like don't sacrifice yourself just to make other people happy. And I was nice most of my life. And now, throughout my healing, I really embraced my anger because my whole life I was never fucking angry because I didn't think I was allowed to be. And it's interesting because in the last few years, I've seen people I haven't seen in a very long time. And I got frustrated at something. And someone said to me, oh my God, Alyssa, I've never seen you angry. Like, what's wrong? And I thought, what's wrong? Yeah, you're right. Isn't there something wrong that, you know, we're in our 40s and you've never seen me angry? Like, thank God I'm angry. Like, that's not good. Like, it's not good to not be angry until you're in your late 30s, early 40s. Like, that's not good. So anyone listening who's not angry, please promise you'll get angry or get in touch with your anger or go to therapy or go to an anger room because those things are awesome. You're allowed to throw shit. It's amazing. But that's really, really important. Because a lot that goes with that too is just allowing yourself to have your feelings. My sister, Jenna, who's my older sister, is a huge support for me. And she also happens to be a psychologist. And one thing that she consistently reminds me is secrets keep people sick. And she helped me a lot when I made this decision to tell my family what happened to me. I made a decision to not do that when I first found out what happened to me, when I first realized what happened. I wanted to keep it to myself. It was hard to digest, and I just didn't want to share it. And my therapist said, if you decide that you want to share it at some point, you can. It's my story. I get to make that decision. And so some time went by. I was unable to work at that time because of my trauma symptoms. And because I couldn't work and because I was holding on to such a big secret, I made the decision that I do want to tell my family. The big thing that comes with that before that decision was made was with my therapist, recognizing that when you make that decision, you have to accept that you don't know how people are going to respond to you. They might not believe what you say. If they do believe you, they might not offer you the support that you need. Because you have to meet them where they are, perhaps with their own trauma or just where they are in their life. I was very lucky that when I sat down, my parents, they believed me immediately. They had no idea that my abuser did what he did. So as you can imagine, as parents, they were mortified because they had a large amount of guilt because there was nothing they could do. And if you're a parent listening, I'm sure you could appreciate what that must have felt like to drop off your four-year-old at a family member's house thinking they were getting taken care of when now you find out that indeed they were not. So that was tough. I'm going to be very honest because that's why I'm here. One of the big things I had to learn that was hard is hard. When you go through this healing, sometimes you do have to create your own healing team because people can't meet you where you need them to be. And there are people that are not always available in the way that I need them to be. So I was lucky enough to, again, have a great therapist, have some family members that are available in the way I need them to be. It is very hard to find group therapy for this type of abuse. Sexual abuse has such shame attached to it because of the nature of the abuse that it is. That fucking pisses me off because the shame should go on the abuser. The shame should go on the person who chases down small children, not on the person who was abused. But that is what happens. Because of that, people don't want to talk about it. And so it's really hard to find a group of people who want to get together and talk about it. And I don't blame people on that. Also, I do want to point out that there are people who don't want to talk about it, and that is their right because it's their story and it's their decision. And also, there are people who are not safe enough to talk about their story. And so, of course, they don't want to go to something like group therapy. I was lucky enough to, after months of looking, to find a group of women who were all sexually abused as children. It was an adult group for women. And I can't say enough about that group. It was at a place where I live called the Crime Victims Council. And it was, there were about eight of us, and the ages were between 18 and 65. And the average age for someone to share that they were abused, sexually abused as a child is 52, just to give you an idea of how long people carry this type of abuse, 52 years old. So that is a really long time to carry something like that. So that is a lot about my journey so far, about my abuse and how I've been handling it, a big part of my story for sure. I definitely wanted to talk about the political climate that we are living in and how it has affected myself and how I know it has affected other survivors. I pause long for a reason to exhale because to say it makes me angry or extremely pissed is an understatement. People in recovery, along with me, may know that with this type of recovery and healing, you do some inner child work. Because not only are you healing an adult, you are also healing a child. So, sitting here with me is my four-year-old self. She needs healing too, because she was ignored for a really long time. So, as a child advocate, I get really fucking pissed as a child advocate because this country treats children like shit. Complete shit. That's the first thing. Second of all, this country treats survivors like shit. And those survivors used to be children. So there's that. People also forget that survivors used to be children. So, for example, we see the Epstein survivors. And I just want to say that I do not personally know any Epstein survivor, but I keep all of you in my thoughts consistently, and I think that you're all amazing. I watched every second of the press conference, and I think that you're all extremely brave, and just keep fucking going. Keep at it. We're all behind you. And when I look at you, I know that you're fighting for yourself and for yourself when you were a victim. You're a survivor now, but when you were a victim, you were a child. And people often forget that when you're at that microphone. I do not forget that. The political climate in this country is such a fucking bunch of shit, and I cannot even stand it. I'm pausing for many reasons. The first time Trump was elected, I had increased symptoms of PTSD, CPTSD, because I did not feel safe living here because of his past and what he was convicted of. And I know the second I say convicted, I can already hear the yaps. He wasn't convicted of anything. Yes, he was. Fucking read a book or research something. And if there's a problem, let me know and I can send you something. It's not an opinion, it's a fact. Point blank, end of sentence. I can speak on behalf of a lot of people who are not speaking. I can speak on behalf of the survivors I know, at least. So for 4 years, I had increased symptoms because it's a predator constantly up there running things, and then you're surrounded by people who care about you, who made a decision to vote for somebody who's making you feel unsafe. That is extremely re-traumatizing for people who were already abused, even as children, because every day you're fighting an illness that was caused by the sexual abuse you endured as a child. So you get through these 4 years, you exhale, you have 4 years where maybe you got to breathe a little. Second time comes up, fucking fantastic. We get to do this again. Now, here we are. Me tell you a little something about grooming. I'll tell you a little bit about my own grooming, and we're going to get back to Epstein in a second. And Trump. When I would go to my abuser's house, sometimes we would go feed the ducks. Sometimes we would go to McDonald's because I loved Happy Meals. We went to feed the ducks and we went to get Happy Meals because I was being groomed. And you have to do nice things for kids in order to abuse them, because if you do mean shit all the time, they're not going to come to your fucking house. That's how it goes. So abusers aren't mean all the time. They groom children. It's not an accident. That's how it works. So all these adults, let me tell you a little something. You are groomed too. If you are around abusers, or if you're around people who do horrible things to children and you hang out with those people, you are not smart. You are being groomed too. So for people who are still supporting Trump, and you might swear to God, he didn't touch those kids, he didn't do anything. He's in those pictures with Epstein just because he was friends with him. Okay. Say that I'm completely fucking nuts, can't read or see pictures or whatever. And for the sake of whatever you're telling me, those are just pictures. He's just in those pictures because he's friends. with him. You are being groomed by actually believing that. Because you're believing everything that someone's telling you. Because you voted for him, you're drawn in. Yep, that's right. It's just a picture. I didn't go there to touch anybody. We're just friends. No, that's not how it works. People are not friends with pedophiles because they like the same food and they want to be friends. People are friends with pedophiles because they want to touch children. So I cannot tolerate, stand, believe we're in this fucking thing. I cannot even believe we're in this situation. I can't believe I live in this country. I can't believe I'm surrounded by this many people who don't defend children. It completely disgusts me every day, especially as someone who has chosen a career to defend children, especially as someone who just last weekend had a flashback. And I would like to go into detail about what happens during that. Because I know at times people throw that word around and don't really know what that means. A few years ago, I filed for disability for my PTSD because my flashbacks were so bad, I was unable to work. Shout out to the state of Pennsylvania, she says sarcastically, because I applied and was denied. I was not surprised I was denied, but I was pissed off by the paper I got back because of the wording was fucking ridiculous. So my psychiatrist, who's fucking amazing, and my therapist, sent in every single detail to everything. And the letter I received back said, although your symptoms are severe enough to collect disability, you know, although your therapist notes, you know, are severe enough, although your psychiatrist notes, you know, illustrate enough that your PTSD is severe enough, you have not worked any jobs other than your field. For example, you did not try to clean houses, you did not try to bookkeep. And I understand what they're saying. I get it. Because I only, you know, was a therapist, was a caseworker, worked in early intervention, etc. But if you really understood what a flashback was, you would know that I can't do bookkeeping or clean a fucking house when I think I'm in 1985 getting abused. There's no fucking way you can do that. So that's fucking ridiculous. So let me tell you what happens. Like I said last weekend, I had two. It was rough. It was a rough week. And I'm going through a lot of transitions, and I can speak maybe for a lot of other survivors that a lot of times when there's changes in your life, or maybe an increase in anxiety or depression or triggers, you can have a flashback. So what happened was I was triggered by something and I didn't realize it bothered me as much as it did. So what can happen sometimes is you can get involuntary muscle twitches, and it's your central nervous system kind of letting you know, like, listen, pay attention. Something's not right. So it starts to look like I'm having a seizure. So my sister knows, I mentioned her earlier, my sister Jenna saw me shake a little bit and looked over. I said, I think I'm okay. And then all of a sudden it switches. What happens for me is I feel like I'm having a dream. So as far as if you would say to me, do you remember what happens after that? The answer is yes and no. After a flashback is over, it's like a dream. Like I can tell you a little bit about what happened, but part of me is not there. And how it's always been explained to me is your brain tries to protect you. So your brain is just so stressed out. Your brain's under so much stress that your brain only does what it has to do to keep you alive. So your brain says, hey, you need to keep your heart beating. So I'm going to do that for you. And you have to keep blinking and you have to keep breathing. So I'm going to keep doing that. But everything else you don't need because you just too much stress for me. So that's what happens. So what happened was the shake started and just a couple. And I looked there and I said, you know, I think I might have a low grade fever. I don't feel right. I took my temperature and it was 99.1. And I looked in the mirror and I was all flushed, like I was getting sick. And I started to feel really tired and I'm like shaky. I'm like, I just don't feel good. Is my blood sugar low? And I sat down and it like a switch. I started bawling my face off and shaking. And just like a switch, it's like I'm 5 years old. I looked at her and I'm shaking. I'm hysterical. And my sister looked at me, look at me in the eyes, look at me in the eyes. You're safe. You're here. You're safe. You're here. And I sounded like I was 5 years old and started screaming, please get me out. Please get me out. Please help me. Please get me out. So you can imagine how that must feel to my older sister, who has her 45-year-old sister looking at her, hysterically crying and screaming, can you please get me out? I was telling her, with a 5-year-old voice to get me out of the room that I was being abused in. But it's 2025. So I was screaming. So thank God for my sister, who A is amazing, but also was a psychologist. So she talked me down, kept telling me I was safe. If you do have a flashback, the worst thing to do is to look down because you can stay in the like I could have stayed in 1985. I could have stayed as a 5-year-old there, and that's not what we were gonna do. So she kept telling me to look at her, which I did, and I was hugging her. I had my fingers in her back, and so finally, like it's almost like you have to wait till it passes. And she did keep saying that you have to get to the other side list. You have to get to the other side. It's okay, I'm here. Just hold on to me. We have to get to the other side. And so I was like yelling. And then finally it passed. And I let go of her and I sat there. And you feel like you have a seizure because you're so freaking exhausted. And she looked at me after a minute and she's like, are you back? Are you here? And I said, I think so. And I just sat there. And then she said, do you remember that? And I said, a little bit. And then you have to sit and just wait. So, those are the things that survivors go through. So, I'm 45, and my abuse started happening when I was 4. And my abuse ended when I was 8, and I'm 45. I can't work full time right now because of where I am right now with my process. I am living in a country where the president has been convicted of sexual assault. And who had a BFF who had a fucking island, an island to sexual traffic young girls. But I'm supposed to stay calm because I know nothing about this. I know nothing about it. So you can imagine why I get real fucking pissed off when I hear people say such ridiculous things, or when people make up ridiculous shit to try to, you know, let's wait longer to vote on it. Let's wait longer to vote on it. Go fuck yourself. How about let's not do that? How let's stop making up excuses for a fucking vote? Or let's think of something even fucking crazier. How about you ask the women what happened? Because here's the thing. You know, is there anybody listening to my story who doesn't believe me? After everything I said, do you not believe what happened to me after I said everything I said? Maybe not. I mean, I don't know. But there are a lot of people. One out of 10 children will be sexually abused by the time they are 18. Those children, 93% of the abuser are known by the child. As a child development specialist, while we're on that topic, I also would like to share this because I think it's important. We talk a lot with children about stranger danger, and that is extremely important. The other thing I would like to share that I think actually is a little more important is talking to children about strange behavior. We talk a lot about stranger danger, but children, as I just said, they have a much higher chance of being hurt by someone they know than a stranger. So I think it's really important to talk to children about strange behavior and what is strange behavior? What is acceptable? What is not acceptable? We don't keep secrets from mom and dad. We don't keep secrets from, aunt, uncle, whoever might be the child's caregiver, things like that. Those are all really important things. Because people don't really talk about that either. And I guess to people who think that Trump walks on water and would never do something like that, if you have children, I guess maybe ask yourself if you would leave your child alone in a room with him and feel comfortable with that. And if your answer is yes, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you. Because I think that's fucking insane. There is no way that many women come forward and say one person does that to them. We do not have the time to come forward and make this shit up. And I don't know why believing women is so fucking hard, but here we are.
Alyssa, I want to acknowledge the, oh gosh, where do I even begin with everything that you just said? But I'm tongue twisted because you talked for 30 minutes straight, and I'm really excited about that. Do not get me wrong. That is incredible because everything that you spoke about is incredible.
Thank
And
you, Zach.
I want to acknowledge the strength. I want to acknowledge the strength and the courage that it takes to share your story on a major platform because it does. And I remember sitting down and telling my mom what I experienced right after it happened. I remember telling her exactly what happened. And that was during my second assault. My first one, she was actually there. She was there. She was in the same household that it was happening in. She was in the exact same household that it was happening in. She was there. And
Oh my gosh.
I remember going to the police department and them looking right at me and saying, "Were you not strong enough to fight him off?"
Oh my gosh.
They did the severe victim blaming that police departments get away with because they hide behind this badge and this gun. Anybody can go through that police academy and can say, "Oh, look at me, I'm a police officer."
Right.
And there's no registry that states, if a police officer violates the code of ethics in one city, they can go to the next city and they can become a cop again and they can continue doing this. There
Right.
is no registry that stops them from doing so. But this is an example of systematic inequalities and systematic issues that continue to run rampant through the criminal justice system, juvenile justice system, family court system, mental health, etc. All the systems in this country. Keep in mind, the United States is the richest country in the entire world, one of the most wealthiest countries in the entire world. But we have the poorest communities and the poorest systems. Let's take a second and think about why that is. You touched on it a little bit ago whenever you mentioned about billionaires. Whenever you mentioned about millionaires, they're in our government. They are in our government, and we're not doing a damn thing to stop them because ultimately, what can we actually really do? Because it's, I
Yeah.
mean, we can go out, we can protest, we can do all of these, but until people realize what is on that ballot, nothing's going
Right.
to change. Nothing is going to change. This is why every single election matters, regardless of how small or how big it is, not just the presidential election, not just congressional races, but also your local sheriff, especially
Absolutely.
thinking about, in like rural communities, because not everywhere is progressive, like the area that I live in, where we luckily have a good sheriff. Not everywhere is like that. And even then, there's still flaws in that system because he's still a part of that exact system that perpetuates violence against survivors.
Right.
But this is why I say that every single election matters. Your city council, your mayor, your school board, your sheriff, every single election matters. Your local utility board. I know that sounds wild, but it's true. Every election matters
No, you're
because
right.
you got to get people in there that understand and listen to the needs of the community, not the needs of the NRA, not the needs of, these Project 2025 funders, not the people that are suppressing survivors' voices. We live
Yes,
in
I
a
agree.
very dangerous precedent where people are losing their food stamps, people are losing their health care, people are losing their housing, people are losing their lives at the hands of others. 19 of the latest homicides in Kansas City are domestic violence related. 19, including Brazen Kane, who was a local teacher in Kansas City. She was pregnant at the time. And I talked about this on a previous podcast episode, but I feel like it's pertinent to keep her story alive
Absolutely.
because this story kind of hit me in a different way. She was an educator, and hearing how her students reacted, knowing that Miss Kane was not going to walk through that door and teach them the next day, that hits. That hits really hard.
Definitely.
And these, this is another example of the system failing survivors directly. They knew that the person that murdered her had a very violent record. They knew that. He violated so many protection orders, violated countless number of things. And
It's pretty.
now she's no longer here to tell her story. So it's up to people like me. It's up to organizations. It's up to these movements and these advocates and these leaders to share these stories and keep those names alive, which is what I'm doing with this podcast. To anybody out there who is listening, if you have a story to share, feel free to reach out because I am committed to sharing the stories that do not reach the headlines. Because mainstream media is not going to save us. This
No, they are
administration is not going to save us.
not.
What is us. We are going to save us. People like my mom, who is disabled, a woman, a cancer patient. She lost her food stamps, potentially losing her Medicaid. There is very high possibility that she could also lose her SSI. But that does not mean that I'm going to give up. That means I'm going to continue fighting like hell because my mom deserved it.
Right.
So with that, Alyssa, what I'm trying to think of the best way to phrase this because this is a very loaded question, but
Go for it, Zach.
what thank you for the boost of confidence. But
You're welcome.
to anybody out there who is listening yet again, yes, this is me. I do bring this comedic approach to it because these topics are so deeply fucking heavy. And that's the
They
reality
are.
of it. You scroll through social media, and what do you see? You see Donald Trump did this. You see Donald Trump did this. Oh, guess what? Still not released in Jeffrey Epstein files, but Donald Trump did this. And now we can afford to do this big, beautiful golden ballroom. Meanwhile,
Yes.
children are dying in our streets. Meanwhile, children are starving. You stop cancer research, and then you state that domestic violence between a man and a wife is nothing to report. Excuse me? Hello, my mom would have something to say about that as a domestic violence survivor. I have something to say about that as a domestic violence survivor. Donald, come talk to me. Oh, you're not going to do that because you don't want to hear the fucking truth.
Nope.
That's the reality. That
That
is
is
the
reality.
absolute reality in which we are living in 2025, where the powerful have more power than we, the people. You cannot sit here and tell me that you understand the Constitution. You cannot sit here and tell me that you want to abide by the Constitution whenever you break it every single fucking day.
Yes.
You
Absolutely
cannot
100.
tell me that you give a damn about people because you don't. As long as his billionaire buddies like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg are happy, the rest of us can, we're better off dead in his eyes.
I agree with that. And
But
actions show that all the time.
I'm not going to stop. And I'm not going to continue calling it out because I have seen how these systems have fucked my mom over. I have seen how these systems have fucked my best friends over. One of my best friends was shot and killed in 2019. Another one was killed in 2024. I remember those phone calls very vividly. I will never get them out of my head. I will never get them out of my head. Speaking of which, one of those phone calls was the 2019 one. One of my closest friends, London Taylor, rest in power. She was shot and killed in her home over her roommate, or making a joke over her roommate not paying rent. The person that called me was the person that was murdered last year.
Oh my
It's
gosh.
literally like this whole like 360 moment and this full circle moment. Because then I remember getting the phone call that once again, Taylor Christine, again, rest in power. She is the mother of seven children. Her youngest child started kindergarten this year.
I'm so sorry. Oh,
Now,
it's awful.
anybody out there, if you're wondering about this movement and what my inspiration is behind founding the movement, my inspiration is very simple. My inspiration is for those 12-year-olds that are hiding in their closet that doesn't have a choice because the court said so. My reason why is because our children deserve to have a future where they do not, where they can actually go to school to learn and not dodge bullets, where survivors are believed, survivors are heard, survivors are embraced, and survivors are at the front and center of every single movement, regardless of what that decision is.
Yes.
I have been a public speaker for the last 12 years. As anybody who's listening, you know this. I can ramble, but I speak the truth to the power, and it's my truth. Meanwhile, I do not speak for everybody else, but we, the people, are sick of this shit.
Beyond.
We, the people, means all of us. That includes your disabled neighbor. That includes your trans neighbor. That includes your immigrant neighbor. That includes all of us. And until we, the people, rise above justice, it's not just in the movement name, it is a mission because justice is inevitable. We know we're going to get it. It's just a matter of when and who's going to do it, who's going to walk alongside us and uplift our voices. It sure as hell is not going to be the mainstream media. Whenever
No.
I reach out to the mainstream media about things that this movement's doing and I get a cold shoulder, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have a place in our rotation for your story. Yeah, of course you fucking don't, because I challenge the status quo. Whenever you challenge the status quo, you get pushed into the algorithm, Meta. You know this. But I digress. But Alyssa, what are you doing to take care of yourself in a deep and dark, harrowing time? What keeps you going?
What keeps me going? That's a great question. I do write. Writing helps me a lot. So does music, and being outside helps me a lot. Grounding helps me a lot, which I know a lot of people may talk about grounding Focusing, like, where you are in the moment, walk, even going outside, taking off your shoes, putting your feet in grass. I know people sounds very earthy, but I'm very earthy, so it works out. But seriously though, like thinking about yourself in the present moment is very helpful because it's so easy to go outside of yourself. And that's not even just for survivors, that's just for anybody because life is just so crazy in these times when it's like so many things are being shoved down your throat at one time that nobody should, we should, none of us should be experiencing this much information in such a small amount of time. But yeah, I think those would be the big things. I danced for 10 years and dancing was a huge part of my life. I was on a dance company, a traveling dance company for 3.5 years, years ago. But I haven't performed in a really long time. And it was just such a healthy outlet and I just loved it. And so actually, I'm trying to get back into it now because it's an emotional outlet as well as a physical outlet. And I think that that would be really helpful. And to be honest, this is something kind of that came up in my healing is when I would have dance recitals. I had a dance recital every year in June. They were like 4 hours long. So shout out to my family because they sat through the whole fucking thing. Because I open the show, close the show, and I'd have a number in the middle. So it's like they couldn't even leave. But unfortunately, my abuser went to all of them. And again, I didn't know what happened to me until I was 39. So all those years in between, I have a lot of memories with my abuser. So he came to every single dance recital. So when I started college, I made the decision like, oh, let me take a break from dancing. Cause it was like, I danced so much that it was like, oh, I'm gonna go to college. I'll take a little break. I realized that that was for the correct reason. But then later in life, I was gonna get back into it in 2019. And then I realized that I stopped doing that because I connected my dancing to my trauma. Like since he was always in the audience with my dancing, I didn't want to do it. And that was not something that I realized I did right away. And when I did, I got really fucking pissed. Because that's my fucking thing. That's not your thing. You don't get to take that. The fuck? So when I read the second I realized I did that, I was like, oh, no. Like, you took enough things. And you don't get my story. I get my story. You fucked it up a little bit, or maybe a lot, but like I have control now. I have control of my story. I get to choose the chapters. I get to choose the ending. You can go fuck yourself. You're dead. Whatever. And so I am getting back into dancing. And I said the other day, when I have my first performance, whenever that might be, it's reclaiming my life and reclaiming the stage because it will be the first time I'll be back dancing. And so that's a really big deal for me. So dancing will be the ultimate thing of healing for me for that reason, and also because it is a huge outlet for me. So definitely that.
It is definitely that, and I have a lot more that I can say, but I also know that if I say what I'm thinking, I will no longer have a podcast and I will no longer have social media.
Damn it.
Right, because if I say exactly what I want to say, I'll just have some people show up at my door, and I really don't want that. So I'm gonna keep it to myself for the time being, because
Okay.
we know freedom of speech doesn't apply anymore. Going back to the
Well,
Constitution,
you
freedom of
sure said
speech.
it. You said it. I mean, I don't know what the hell I'm allowed to do anymore. I mean, I don't know. Because I gotta tell you, oh man. Yeah, man.
You
We're on
know,
the same page, Zach.
whenever you and I did the, and I want to talk about this for like a very brief second. I know we have a lot to say about this, but we're running out of time here. But
That's okay.
whenever we did your pre-interview, you mentioned about the symptoms of long COVID.
Yes.
Now, something that I've come to realize is that me and my mom both have long COVID. Which,
Yes.
for anybody who out there, these are the after symptoms of after COVID, but some of those symptoms continue to linger. You know, there will be times that I will feel the chest tightness. There
Yes.
are times that I will get a severe migraine. And I don't know about you, but something that I have realized is I cannot stand Velveeta mac and cheese anymore, which is really fucking weird, because anybody who knows me knows that I absolutely love mac and cheese. But I cannot sit and eat a bowl of it because it tastes like shit.
Oh, damn it.
Now, I've come to realize that because there are certain, and not even just that, that's one of the many foods that I used to eat all the time that just tastes incredibly bland to me now. I can barely eat my peanut butter and toast, which I absolutely love. It's like peanut butter and toast, or, you know, bread.
Yeah.
I can hardly eat it anymore because it tastes just so incredibly bland.
Has that, do you mind if I ask, has that, because as you know, I have long COVID as well. I am, first of all, I'm sorry that you are dealing with that. That's the first thing I'd like to say. The second thing I'd like to ask you is, did you lose your taste when you had COVID?
Yes. So, and you know how fucking weird it is not to be able to taste anything or be able to smell anything, especially with
Yeah.
gassy ass dogs being in my house. I know these dogs farted and they enjoyed it because nobody can smell it. Because you have three people running around with COVID, can't taste anything, can't smell anything. Thank God. But
I did lose my taste and smell, but it did come back. But I do know people that lost it and never got it back. But I may have a contact person for you if you would like it about that.
let's talk offline.
So offline, we'll talk about that.
Yes, let's definitely talk offline. And then anybody out there who's dealing with long COVID, we would love to amplify your story as well, because this shit was absolutely brutal. And you know, at the time, my partner was working in as a pharmacy tech at CVS, and she started kind of like coughing, and I was like, okay, you know, she has like these allergies. And then the cough like persisted, kept getting stronger, stronger, stronger. And I looked at her and I said, if you get me fucking sick, and then my mom gets sick, I'm liable to kick your ass. Anyway, so
Fair, that's fair.
and she listens to the podcast, dear, I love you, but I will never forget this. She comes in there and she was like, well, I don't know how to tell you, but I don't have my taste and I don't have my smell. I said, you are going to get a test right fucking now. So she did, and lo and behold, came back positive. Then I started coughing, and I was like,
No.
oh, hell, here we go. This is the beginning of the end. Then I started coughing, 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 started throwing up a little bit of blood, and I was like, here we go. So I go to the ER, I test positive, and then about like a day or so later, my mom starts coughing too. And she was hospitalized about a year
I'm so
later.
sorry.
And I think if she wouldn't have had her Medicaid expansion, she would have had to pay over $150,000 hospital bill because she was in the hospital for a week.
Oh my
And
gosh.
then we got our COVID vaccines, because whenever we got COVID, they were not available. They, you know, that long process of trying to get those vaccines available, but we finally got them, and we've been doing fairly well ever since.
I'm so glad.
So, and I'm grateful for those vaccines. Don't let RFK Jr. know about that, but
hey, I'm behind you. And I would like to say one thing, and I'm not, this is a whole other thing, but I will say really quickly, long COVID is real. Do not let doctors gaslight you, because that's another podcast. It is real. And I go to a special COVID clinic. It's the Center for Post-COVID Care at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. So definitely there are places to be seen with people who know what they're doing. I live near two very large reputable hospitals, and I don't have very good things to say about them because they don't really offer a whole lot of care, which is why I go to New York City to be treated. So yeah. And also people, like you had said, like I had to wait too, Zach, to like get vaccinated. Like when I first had COVID was what, the very first week of 2021. So I had to wait a few months to get vaccinated. And people, you know, because everyone's a scientist and everyone knows everything, you know. So everyone's a scientist, Zachary. So when I got long COVID, everyone's like, "Do you know why you have that?" And I was like, "Do tell." And they were like, "It's because you got vaccinated. It's a vaccine injury." And I'm like, "Well, no, because I was not vaccinated. And number two, there are three studies I have that actually my long COVID doctor did to prove you otherwise. So anyone who's calling it a vaccine injury, I'm not saying people did not get long COVID symptoms after their vaccine, but the science, I know that's a scary word now, but that science proves that that is not so. So I know it's scary, but there's actually studies people do, and the studies give answers, and the answers are correct. That's crazy. All right.
Absolutely. You know, and I entirely agree. And I'm glad that you were able to find that care. And speaking of New York City, shameless plug, there is a primary or a general election happening with the New York City mayor
Yes.
election next month. And, you know, we do not endorse candidates, but there's one candidate that speaks to my mind and brings the energy, brings the power, and that is Zohran Mamdani. Now, whenever I
Yes.
tell you, we sat down and talked with Lindsay Boylan, who was the first woman to come out against Andrew Cuomo for sexual harassment. For sexual harassment and horrific, horrific, horrific. But Lindsay, you know, we love you. And I just wanted to add that shameless plug in there that New York City do the right thing. We cannot have Andrew Cuomo near that city hall at all. He resigned in shame as the governor. Do not put him in office again. Think about those grandmothers who died
Yeah.
during COVID that he refused to shut down the state for.
Wow.
Think about that
Ugh.
for a minute. Let that sink in for a second. And then get your ass out and vote in this election. Alyssa,
Yes.
thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Is there anything else you would like to share with anybody who may be listening?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, like you said, I spoke for 30 minutes straight. No, on a serious note, thank you, Zach, so much for having me on. I'm so thankful that you have this podcast. Like you said, when we first met, you wanted to create a safe space for people and to give people, you know, a voice to the voiceless, and you really do that. And I am so appreciative for that. I would like to dedicate my podcast, if it's okay, to two of my family members, my Grammy and my aunt, who are no longer with us. They are both survivors as well. And I just want to shout out to both of them today because they were two extremely strong women. And it's actually my Grammy's, it's the anniversary of her death today, 8 years. And she was a survivor and extremely strong. So I just wanted to say that today. So, shout out to her. And thank you again, Zach, for everything.
Absolutely. You know, you have an open invite anytime you have anything you want to talk about, which I know that you do. But I look forward to talking to you very soon, my friend. Okay. Please take it
Thanks
easy
so
out
much,
there.
Zach. Take care.
Of course. Bye-bye.
Bye.